Okay, I want to cover a mitzvah from this coming week's Sedra, and if there's time, to go back to last week's Sedra to another mitzvah that this one, the one I'm going to speak about today, is extremely common and relevant. The one, if we have time, from last week's Sedra is very not common and almost irrelevant, practically speaking, but very relevant in philosophy. Okay. The mitzvah from this coming week's Sedra is Lo Sevashel Gidi B'Chalei Imo. Don't cook a kid in its mother's milk, which we all know has nothing necessarily to do with kid and its mother's milk, but you're not allowed to cook milk and meat. It applies to all kosher domesticated animals, not wild animals. Domesticated and wild here has a halachic significance. Domesticated animals include cows, oxen, goats, sheep. Those are domesticated animals, and the wild animals are like deer, those kinds of animals. Okay, so it only applies to cooking, and cooking with the milk of a kosher domesticated animal. But if you cook with the milk of a wild animal, or you cook the meat of a wild animal in the milk of a domesticated animal, or you cook anything in non-kosher milk, milk from a non-kosher animal, or you cook a non-kosher animal in kosher milk, okay, or you cook fowl in any milk, you don't transgress this prohibition. Only prohibited, the milk has to come from a kosher domesticated animal and the meat from a kosher domesticated animal, not a fowl. The rabbis prohibited most of the other situations. They prohibited milk of a wild animal, meat of a wild animal, and meat of a fowl. Obviously there's no milk from a fowl, right? But meat of a fowl also cooked in the milk. Now, it said this pasuk, Lo Sevashel Gidi B'Chalei Imo, is said three times in the Torah, and the rabbis learn out from that there are three separate prohibitions. Really two, but three that are really two, we'll see. One prohibition is you're not allowed to cook it. Even if you don't eat it, and you have no enjoyment from it, just the actual cooking itself is prohibited. Therefore, if you are taking a cooking class, and you have no intention of eating what you cook or have any enjoyment, you're going to throw it down to the garbage immediately afterwards, you're still not allowed to cook milk and meat together. But again, it only applies to the ones that are prohibited from the Torah. The ones that are prohibited rabbinically, the cooking itself is not prohibited. They only prohibited eating it. Okay. However, we'll see that if you cook it for the sake of eating it, that's also prohibited, rabbinically at least. Okay, we'll get to it in a second. The Rambam, that's the first prohibition, the cooking itself. The second prohibition is, even if you didn't cook it, somebody else cooked it, you're not allowed to eat the product that's been cooked. Milk and meat that's been cooked together is prohibited to be eaten. It's a negative commandment in the Torah. And not only aren't you allowed to eat it, you're not allowed to have any enjoyment from it either. You can't have any benefit from it. You can't sell it, get money. You can't use it to put on your, a wound or something like that, or any other kind of enjoyment. Can't feed it to your dog or to any dog. It's prohibited. You can't even make dog food out of it because you're not allowed to have any enjoyment out of it. The Rambam learns that there's really only two prohibitions, even though three things are prohibited. The prohibition is not cooking it and not having any enjoyment, and eating is one of the enjoyments you can't have. So there's no two separate prohibitions, eating and enjoyment. If you eat and have enjoyment, you're over one prohibition. If you eat, have enjoyment, and cook it, you have two prohibitions. Okay. The Ibn Ezra explains why did the Torah, if it's prohibited, the way I told you, across the board, all kosher domesticated animals in all kosher milk from those domesticated animals. Doesn't have to be the mother's milk, and it doesn't have to be a gedi, a goat. So then, why the Torah say it in the strange way of Lo Sevashel Gedi B'Chalev Imo? It's interesting also that even the Karoyim, who don't usually follow the Mesorah of Chazal, and usually follow the simple, literal meaning of the Torah, also hold that Lo Sevashel Gedi B'Chalev Imo is not limited to cooking a goat in its mother's milk. They also learn that it has to do with all milk and all animals. So it's obviously a Mesorah that even permeated them. So Ibn Ezra says, why does it say, what's it called, Gedi B'Chalev Imo? He says an interesting idea. He says, normally, cooking any other animal in milk, people don't do. It doesn't taste good. It's very not tasty to cook meat in milk, because the meat needs to be cooked a long time and the milk not. So when you cook the milk and the meat together, you overcook the milk or undercook the meat. So it doesn't come out good to cook meat in milk. There's also a young sheep, right? A kid that's, well, I guess, yeah, a young sheep, not a goat, right? Whatever a young sheep is called, okay? What? A lamb, okay. A lamb, which is soft, which could be cooked well in milk, has a lot of juice. Lamb is a very juicy meat. And the milk is obviously very juicy, and it doesn't come out tasting good. But a young goat is soft, not very juicy, and therefore it's the only thing that cooking in milk is tasty. And the Torah always spoke about the usual case, even though it may apply to all cases, but the Torah speaks about the usual case. So even though it's prohibited to cook anything in milk, any kind of meat in milk, but this is the only one really people would do, because the other ones, practically speaking, people wouldn't do anyway. That's what the Ibn Ezra says. The Bali HaTosfos say another practical reason why the Torah said this specifically, because this again is more common, because goats have a lot of milk. They usually give birth to two or three animals at the same time, and the Rabban Shalom provides them with a lot of milk. The goat itself is very small, so it's possible, therefore, to use the mother's milk to cook the goat. Other animals don't have so much milk, or the animal's bigger, so you're not going to be able to cook the whole animal in the mother's milk anyway, so it's not common. So the Torah said the common thing, even though it applies to even the uncommon situations. The Malbim says that the words themselves, Lo Sevashel Gedi B'Chalev Imo, does not mean, even literally, don't cook a goat in its mother's milk. It's not the literal meaning. What's the literal meaning? It says the word bishul has three connotations. The word bishul can mean to cook. The word bishul can also mean to ripen. Like fruits are mivushal, they're mivashel. It means to ripen. Okay? So bishul can be to cook. Bishul can also mean to prepare for eating and refer to the eating too. To the eater, not just the cooker, but the one who's preparing something to eat and eating. And also, you can cook that other people should get benefit out of it. Not eat it, but have benefit. So the word Lo Sevashel has in it, in its simple meaning, don't cook, don't eat, don't have any benefit. Now, Gedi, now, the Ksav Kabbalah says that the Gedi doesn't mean a goat. A gedi, because gedi izim means a goat. A gedi means any young animal from the kosher animal, domesticated animals. That's what it means. And he brings proofs to it. And the word, he says the word gedi comes from the word meged. I mean meged shomayim. It means a delicacy. It's a young animal is a delicacy. It's delicate and it's a delicacy. So when the Torah said Gedi, it didn't mean a goat, a young goat. It meant any young, kosher, domesticated animal is called a Gedi. And the mother doesn't mean over here the mother, literally the mother, that gave birth to it. And its mother's milk means in the same variety of milk that that is. That's a kosher domesticated animal. The milk has to come from a kosher. The word aim can mean not mother, but a general category. Right? Where do we have such a thing? Yesh aim lamikra, which means there is a general category. Or another case of aim. But what's it called in English, even in Hebrew, right? If you remember, Saddam Hussein said that the war, the first Iraqi war, is going to be the mother of all battles. Right? It means that variety, right? That's going to be the kind of battle, a kind of battle, right? That's extremely intense, something special. So the word aim, says the Ksav v'Kabbalah, means a variety, a similar variety. Don't cook a gedi, meaning a kosher, domesticated animal, in the same variety of milk. So it's not specific about a mother and about a goat. It means literally what the halacha is. Rosham Shofar Hirsch says also that a gedi is any young animal, kosher animal. And he says, why is it called the gedi? Not milashin meged, like the Ksav Kabbalah says, the delicacy, but from the word gadot. Gadot means to cut. The animal, when it's born, is cut away from the mother. So it's a cutaway. He says, interestingly, a gozel, is a, what's it called, is a bird that's just born, that's also stolen away from the mother, out of the egg. So it's gozel. Gozel. This is gadah. This is cutaway. Okay. And he says, what's it called? Why does it say the mother's milk? To tell me that even the mother's milk, which is so similar to this, still you're not allowed to cook them together. Surely other milk, which is different than the animal itself. Rav David Tzvi Hoffman says the reason the Torah says it's mother's milk, even though it doesn't only apply to the mother's milk, it applies to all milk, is because if it wouldn't say chalav imo, I could read it chalev, lo sevashel gedi bechalev, in fact, and I wouldn't know it's milk. The Torah doesn't have vowels. So in order to know it's milk, it has to say chalav imo, and then I know it's not fat, because what does fat have to do with the mother? Obviously, it's mother's milk. So you read it chalav and not chalav. Okay. So that's the general meaning of the sentence. Now let's see the halachas. It's usher to cook, eat, and have any enjoyment from the Torah. Like we said, from milk, from a kosher domesticated animal. But from the Torah, you would be allowed to cook, eat, and have enjoyment from a undomesticated kosher animal cooked in kosher milk, from a fowl cooked in kosher milk, or non-kosher meat cooked in kosher milk. All of that is not prohibited from the Torah. Now, what is called bishul? Many say the bishul is only where you actually cook, where there's a majority of liquid, and you put something solid in it and you boil it up. That's called cooking. But frying, baking, roasting, right, is not called cooking. And that's only prohibited from the rabbis. And some say that they are also called cooking. Anytime you have liquid and solid coming together in any way, frying, roasting, baking, right, still is considered cooking. And that's also prohibited from the Torah. And it seems like most of the poskim hold like that it's prohibited from the Torah. The difference is, if it's not prohibited from the Torah, then you'd be allowed to cook it, just not eat it. Right? And you're allowed to have enjoyment from it, too. If it's prohibited from the Torah, then you can't cook it, and you can't have any enjoyment in addition to not eating it. It doesn't include, from the Torah, according to everyone, soaking, what's it called, like salting, which many times are considered like cooking, but not for this. So if you soak something for 24 hours in a meat, in milk, that's not prohibited from the Torah. It's prohibited rabbinically. It's not prohibited from the Torah. If you salt milk products together with meat products, that's also considered like cooking insofar that it absorbs, but it's not prohibited from the Torah concerning basar b'chalav, and therefore you could have enjoyment from it. You couldn't eat it, but you could have enjoyment. The Sfarim bring down that if you cook the rabbinically prohibited things with the intention of eating it, even if you don't intend to eat it, you intend to cook it for somebody else, or even for a goy, then you're not allowed to cook it, because we're afraid that somebody will come to eat it. But if you're cooking it for non-eating purposes, you're cooking it to feed your dog, you're cooking it to use as a medicine, then you're allowed to cook those things that are only prohibited rabbinically. Next prohibition, you're not allowed to bring milk and meat to the table at the same time and eat milk and meat, two different people eat at the same time, what's it called, milk and meat at the same table, as long as the people know each other. Okay, they don't know each other, we're not afraid they're going to share their food by accident, and the guy who's eating the meat's going to end up eating the milk, and they, what's it called, are eating without any sign, symbol on the table that would remind them that they shouldn't eat from each other. But if you have something on the table, either they're eating on different table mats, tablecloth, each one has his own tablecloth or his own table mat, or they have something on the table that's not needed for that meal that separates between them, then that's enough of a reminder that they shouldn't, they make by mistake, eat the opposite thing. They're not allowed to eat from one common bread, because we're afraid that the meat will be on one's fingers and he'll touch the bread, and then the one with the milk will eat the fleshik of bread. Okay. The same thing, you can't use, what's it called, same salt or other condiments where you dip the thing into the condiment. But if you pour it like a salt shaker, that's not a problem, because that doesn't come in contact with the food at all. You're not, another thing they prohibited, you're not allowed to eat milk after meat, and you have to wait, the Gemara says, till the next meal. Now, what does the next meal mean? So some say that what's it called, it means 6 hours. In other words, the time that you would have the most time between the morning meal and evening meal, about 6 hours. That's the accepted custom. The exception is there are some places that say 3 hours, Germany, and some places have 1 hour in Holland. But otherwise, almost uniform in the world is 6 hours. Now the reason for this, why do you have to wait till the next meal? Why do you have to wait 6 hours? Some say it's because that's the amount of time that the meat remains between your teeth and still maintains an identity as meat. So if you're going to eat or drink milk after that, you're going to have the meat and milk in your mouth at the same time. After 6 hours, the meat already is not meat. It's already, lost its taste or whatever. And then, if you still have things between your teeth, you just clean it out, wash out your mouth, eat something solid that's parved, and then you can eat the milk. That's one opinion. Second opinion is that for the 6 hours, or three, or one, whatever it may be, the digesting food brings up the taste of the meat into your mouth from time to time. And therefore, it's like mixing them together. The differences between these two, and we are machmir, like both opinions, because the differences between them would be, what if you chewed meat, but you didn't swallow it? So the meat between your teeth is there, but there's no taste of meat coming from the digesting food, because there is no digesting food. What happens if you drank liquid meat and didn't chew it? There's no meat between your teeth because you didn't chew anything, but it's digested. There, that reason would apply, but the reason of the meat between your teeth wouldn't apply. We're machmer in both things. If you chew food, okay, even if you don't swallow it, you have to wait 6 hours. Chew meat. If you swallow meat, even if you don't chew it, you have to wait 6 hours. Where everybody would agree you don't have to wait 6 hours, if you taste without chewing, you taste some soup, and you don't swallow it. So you haven't swallowed it, and you haven't chewed it. Then you don't have to wait 6 hours. You just have to wash out your mouth, and eat something solid, parif, and then you can eat the milfiks after that. Now that you count these 6 hours, you're going to use 6 hours now as the norm. You count these 6 hours not from when you finish the meal. Let's say you have a long meal, Shabbos meal, and you finish the meat at 11 o'clock. But you continued on talking, singing, eating dessert till 12 o'clock. You can eat already milchiks at 5 o'clock. 6 hours after you finished eating the meat at the meal, even though you continued the meal, you didn't bench till 12 o'clock. You don't have to wait till 6 o'clock. You don't have to wait till 5 o'clock. However, at some point, you have to bench before you eat the milchiks, because that would be still considered the same meal. So you must bench and wait 6 hours, but you don't have to wait 6 hours from the time you bench. You have to wait 6 hours from the time you finished eating the meat, and it doesn't make a difference when you bench, as long as you bench before you ate the milchiks. If after 6 hours you find meat between your teeth, again, wash out your mouth and eat something solid. That's parif. This also applies not only to actual meat and actual milk, but anything cooked with milk, anything cooked with meat. Also, same thing applies. Same limitation of not eating one after the other. Okay, in the same meal, you can't eat meat after milk either. Okay, it has to be in two meals. And some hold all you have to do is wash out your mouth, eat something solid, and then immediately you can eat meat after milk. Okay? Others hold you have to wait a half an hour. Some have the meaning of waiting a half an hour between milk and meat, in addition to washing out their mouth and eating something solid. If you eat hard cheese, you have to wait 6 hours after hard cheese before you eat meat products. Now, what is considered hard cheese? So it's definitely not cream cheese or smetana, right? The leaven. Those are not hard cheeses. What about the regular gvina levana, right? Which is called gvina kasha. It's called hard cheese. So halachically, hard cheese is where it is aged minimal 6 months. Or it's already wormy, right? That's very hush of a cheese, is moldy, wormy, right? Those cheeses are called hard cheeses. If they're not aged 6 months, then they're not hard cheeses. Now, most commercial cheeses, American cheese, the Gavina, all the cheese here, is aged 30 days, 60 days the most, 90 days sometimes, only 3 months. So, and it doesn't age in the package. Once it's in the package, not aging anymore. So in America, most of the poskim held, or Moshe Feinstein and others, that our normal cheeses are not considered hard cheese. And you can eat fleishiks right after that, right, as long as you wash out your mouth, eat something pariv, and bench in between. The difference would be, if you eat pizza, can you eat fleishiks before 6 hours? There are some cheeses that are aged 6 months. One of them is Parmesan cheese. Some Parmesan cheeses are aged 6 months. Those would be a problem. The poskim here in Eretz Yisrael, many of them hold that since today they have processes, chemicals, that age the cheeses, the final product is the same thing as a 6 month age cheese, it's just we have things that speed up the process. That's considered already aged 6 months, even though it wasn't aged 6 months, because the process was speeded up by enzymes or chemicals or whatever. And they would hold, therefore, that the regular pizza cheese, the regular cheeses that we have here that are called gvina kasha, are really hard cheeses, and you can't eat fleishiks for 6 hours after you eat those cheeses. Okay? So if you're from Chutz Laretz, and you accepted the psakim of those gedolim there, then you can eat meat less than 6 hours after most hard cheeses. If you follow the poskim here, then you have to wait 6 hours after most of the hard cheeses here. Okay. Also, anything that was cooked, milk cooked in a vessel, the milk is absorbed into the vessel. You can't cook meat in that same vessel. We're not going to go into all the halachas of basar v'chalav and bleas, but you have to worry about the things absorbed into the various vessels that you're also mixing and cooking milk and meat in that way too. Okay. And therefore, you have to mark your silverware. If they're the same pattern, you have to mark them so you know which ones are milchik and which ones are flesh. You can buy different patterns so you know which one. And the minhag Yisrael is that if you have silverware that's very similar, you mark the dairy ones, right? And the ones without the marks are the fleishik. This way everybody knows. It's a common, generic thing. If you go to somebody's house and you'll know which one is the dairy one, that's the one that if one of them is marked, it's the dairy one that's marked. But normally we get completely different looking silverware, so you don't have to mark either of them. You know which one is. The only problem is if people come into your house, don't know which one is. Okay. But people coming into your house shouldn't use your silverware unless they ask you anyway. So.
Well, it's a very big problem, you know. You go to somebody's house who's suddenly hospitalized and you have to take care of the kitchen, or somebody has a baby and you go into their kitchen like I have to do, and I don't know. Nothing was marked.
Okay, that's a problem. Okay, the Yisod V'Shorish Avoda brings down that he spent time marking his silverware, the milchik one, and he was extremely happy. He felt he was doing mamash a mitzvah. So a mitzvah to protect yourself from coming to eat basar b'chol. Okay, now the third part of this, the ideas behind this prohibition. What's the concept? What's the tamei ha-mitzvah? What's the taste in this mitzvah? So first of all, the Ibn Ezra says very clearly, and it's based on many chazals, that basar b'chalav is one of the things that's a chok. It has no real rational reason, and in the future God will tell us what it's all about. But it's one of the mitzvahs, one of the prohibitions that basically is beyond rationale. There's no logical reason for basar b'chalav. That's the major thing. We're going to see five very logical ideas, but it doesn't explain every detail about it. So it's an idea, but the major, the complete idea behind this is something beyond human rationale. Now I'm going to tell you four, and these are all categories. In other words, there are four different kinds of explanations. And one that I'm going to tell you is the last. Let's start with the Rabbeinu Bachya. He says the idea is that cooking milk and meat together, the product is something that is not spiritually healthy to eat. It's a very crass, material kind of food. It's a very, what's the word I'm looking for? Instead of being very spiritual or base, maybe it's more animalistic. It's we'll see in one second why. Right, it's a very coarse kind of food, not an adin, not a very fine, refined kind of food, and therefore it has an effect. We know that the animals that are prohibited are cruel animals, right, or very coarse animals, and what you eat is what you are. It has an effect on your personality, on your midos, or whatever. It has an effect on your thought process, an effect on how refined you are. If you eat unrefined food, you're more unrefined. You eat more refined food, you're more refined person. So this follows that concept that it's a very coarse and animalistic kind of food. Now let me explain why. Meat is meat, is animal. Eating meat is a danger because you could pull yourself down to the level of the animal by eating meat, right? Blood is prohibited because the blood is the essence of the animal. So we're never allowed to eat blood. Blood is really animalistic, really could affect you to be like an animal. Now the Gemara says that milk is a byproduct of blood. The blood changes into milk. Okay? And however, when you cook the milk with meat, it brings out the blood nature of the milk and reverts it back to its blood state. It doesn't make it back into blood, but it takes out the qualities of blood that are in the milk, and now you have milk of meat and blood, like together, it makes the meat even more coarse, more animalistic. And also, he says, once you have this very coarse food, that's milk that came back to have its qualities of blood mixed with the meat, so now that food doesn't digest easily. It remains in your system, if not physically, but at least chemically or spiritually. And therefore, it's metamte mesalev. It affects you in a very negative spiritual way, okay? And the Rambam also says a similar idea in his first explanation of this in Mora Nevuchim. And the Sefer Habakkuk adds, this only happens when you cook the two things together. But if you just mix them together, soak them together, it doesn't have that effect. By cooking the milk with the meat, you bring out the worst in the milk, the worst in the meat, and the compound that's created is a very, very harmful food for a person's spiritual makeup. That's why the Rabbeinu Bachya says the Torah connected this to Reishis Bikuri Admos Chatovi Beis Hashem Elokecha. Your first fruits you should bring to the temple. Don't cook milk and meat. What's the connection between bringing your first fruits and not cooking milk and meat? So he says that when you go to the Beis HaMikdash and bring your first fruits, right, Aliyah L'Regel, that's the time of the Yomim Tovim. The purpose of going to the Beis HaMikdash is to be inspired, uplifted, get a feeling of God's presence. But you need... Again, the purpose of Aliyah L'Regel, of going up to the temple three times a year during the holidays, is to get me inspired by the Beis HaMikdash, get a feeling of God's presence. For that, you need to be sensitive spiritually. But if you eat milk and meat, you are making your body insensitive and more crass and coarse and not open to feel God's presence and integrate the Torah or whatever into your... The more coarse your physical is, the less chance you have of integrating spiritual things. And the more your mind is verstopft, your heart is verstopft. So that's the connection. Reb David Zvi Hoffman has another similar idea, right, same category of reason. It's not a spiritually healthy food. But he explains a little bit differently why. He said meat in general is not healthy for a person spiritually. And therefore, in the beginning of the world, God prohibited all meat. It was only for practical reasons that meat became prohibited after the flood. And still, God contained it very, very much, that you couldn't eat meat everywhere in the Midbar. They could only eat meat if they brought it as a sacrifice. When they finally came into Eretz Yisrael, people were far away from the Mikdash, so the Rosh Hashanah said, okay, you can eat meat even without bringing it as a sacrifice. But he gave all different kinds of what kind of meat you can eat, what kind you can't eat. Right, and what way you can eat the meat. This is another limitation. You can't eat it cooked with milk because that's the worst kind of meat. Similar idea. Now, meat itself is makes a person more animalistic. So the Torah already permitted it, but it limited it very much. So where it's at its worst, right? Milk and meat together, which is more of animalistic, that you can't eat. The Oznayim L'Torah says, because milk also should have been prohibited. Because it's Eiver Min Achai. It's something that comes from a living animal. You're not allowed to take a limb from a living animal. Here's something that comes out of a living animal. Eggs would be the same thing. Doesn't explain why eggs are not in this. But milk is something that comes from a living animal. Right? And directly, while it's alive. So that's also more animalistic. Right? The egg could be different to a certain degree because the egg doesn't come directly from the animal alive. The egg has to mature inside the shell after it leaves the animal. So it's removed from the animal a little bit. Here, the milk is directly comes from a living animal, and therefore it's more animalistic. The meat is animalistic. Mixing the two together is double animalistic. Okay. Svasemis says that the whole idea of eating and the chlau, our service to God in this world, is to take the bad and turn it to good. Separate the bad from the good. So the natural process takes the bad, the blood, and changes it into something white and more pure milk. You're going to take now the milk and cook it with meat, turn it back into blood. That's the antithesis of service of God. Taking the good and turning it back into bad. Taking that which is less animalistic and making it more animalistic is not a proper thing. So all of those fit into the same general category, that the prohibition is based on the fact that this is not a spiritually healthy thing to eat. The only problem is, lechora, that the prohibition includes cooking it, even if you never eat it. So you have to say that the main prohibition is eating. But the Torah said, if you don't cook it together, you'll never come to eat the cooked product. So in order to avoid eating it, the Torah prohibits even the cooking. Don't just don't eat cooked milk and meat. Don't even cook it, so you'll never come to eat it. You won't be around. And don't have any enjoyment from it, because you may come to eat it too. So everything the Torah prohibited is for the sake of not eating it. And the Torah made it very difficult to come to eat this by prohibiting across the board. That's one approach. Second approach is the Balei HaTosfos. They said that the main prohibition here is the cooking. And the Torah prohibited the eating and having enjoyment, so you won't cook it. Because if you know you're going to cook it and it's going to be prohibited to eat or have any enjoyment, you wouldn't want to cook it. But the prohibition is the cooking itself. What's wrong with the cooking? It's cruel. Cooking an animal in the milk, which represents the mother, is a cruel thing. You're taking the mother's milk. It may not be the mother of this animal, but the concept is it's mother's milk. And instead of nurturing the animal with that mother's milk, you're cooking the animal in that which should be its nurturing. You're cooking in it. That's cruelty. Okay. It's similar to other things the Torah prohibited. Not shechting a mother and the child on the same day. Not taking the mother bird and the children together. Right? All of that is the same concept of cruelty. With this you can understand perhaps what Rabbi Yonasan ben Uzziel says. He says, what's the connection between bringing your first fruits to the temple and not cooking milk and meat? The Yonasan ben Uzziel says that if you cook milk and meat, I'm going to cook your grain while it's still unripe, right? I'm going to make it cook together with the chaff, together with the straw. You're not going to enjoy your first fruits. I'm going to make the fruit fall off the tree. It's going to fall off the tree before it's ripe. So it sounds like I'm going to be cruel to you because you're cruel people and cook milk and meat. Sounds like that there's a connection. God is warning us. I'm going to do things that are cruel to you because you're mita k'neged mita, you're being cruel. The Rashbam also says that it's a cruelty because you're taking the thing that causes something to be able to exist and you're using it to destroy it. Using it to use it for its consumption. That's a cruel idea. The Balei HaTosfos says there's also a hint over here not to delay bringing your Bikurim. Another connection between Bikurim. Don't wait for the animal to mature, right? Don't cook it, meaning let it ripen in its mother's milk, and therefore not bring it to the temple on the first opportunity. Don't, in other words, it's a euphemism besides the regular prohibition. Don't let the animal ripen too much in its mother's milk and avoid bringing it to the temple, which means, at the one hand, we don't want you to be cruel, but if you're too merciful, it's also no good. Do what you have to do. Don't be cruel, don't cook the meat in the mother's milk, and don't delay bringing the animal as a sacrifice right? Because you want to let it ripen in its mother's milk and stay by the mother too long. Don't be cruel. Don't be overly merciful either, where it's against what God wants. Okay. That's the second category. Third category. Third basic category of explaining this prohibition is the Rambam in Mor Nebuchim, and his second reason. This was an idolatrous practice. Idolaters used to cook milk and meat as part of their holiday services. And therefore the Torah connects bringing your Bikurim to the temple during the holidays and not cooking milk and meat. Don't do like the idolaters did. Now others add to this that not only do they cook and eat milk and meat as an idolatrous pagan practice, but they took that milk and meat product and fertilized their fields with it and made the fruit grow better. Not in a physically natural way, but in a spiritually idolatrous way. They felt that the product of that milk and meat had spiritual, magical power to make the fruit grow better. So therefore the Torah said, bring your Bikurim, bring your first fruits, but don't fertilize it with milk and meat like the idolaters do, because that's idolatrous. The Hamikdavar says a similar thing. The Malbim says a similar thing. The Sha'ar Basram brings on this idea of that they used to fertilize their fields as a charm, a magical kind of thing with milk and meat. Some say that the Torah says three prohibitions, one after the other. Don't sacrifice losizbach al chomet stam zibchi. Don't sacrifice the sacrifice erev Pesach when this chomet's around. That has to do with Pesach. And then it says, what's it called? Reishis bikuri admos v'tovi beis Hashem alokecha. That has to do with Shavuos. And then it says losivasho gedi b'chali gemo. Because on Sukkos, when they used to bring in the crops, the goyim, when they gathered in their crops, would have a fest, and they would have what's it called? They would cook milk and meat and eat it. In fact, one of the Mefarshim says, yeah, Barbanel, I think, says that in his time in England, mentions England, all the shepherds would get together twice a year, and they would have this idolatrous feast where they cooked and ate milk and meat. So it was an idolatrous practice, and it was in order that the animals and the crops should be successful. So that is a third basic concept. It's an idolatrous practice. Don't be like idolaters. Fifth idea is a Sefer HaChinuch. He relates this to the prohibitions of mixing diverse things. You're not allowed to crossbreed animals, crossbreed trees, grow diverse things, kilayim together. Right? The Torah doesn't want you to create artificial things that are crossbreeding. Why not? So, same thing over here. You are crossing two distinct things. Milk and meat, we'll see, are two distinct areas of creation, and they shouldn't be crossed together. Okay? And the main prohibition is the cooking. And the Torah prohibited the eating and the enjoyment, nor that you shouldn't cook it. The Rikanti says that milk, every physical thing in the world corresponds to spiritual powers that are represented by these things and that are behind those things. Everything has spiritual powers behind it. Meat represents spiritual powers of din, of justice, judgment. Milk, white milk, has behind it spiritual powers of mercy. By mixing milk and meat, cooking them together, you are short-circuiting and mixing together judgment and mercy that don't belong together. They're two distinct things. And therefore, Moshe Vali was a student of the Ramchal, or Moshe Chaim Lutzato. He says that even the Gedi, the Aes is the goat. The Aes represents asus, strength, boldness, judgment, harshness. The Gedi is the best, right, of the harshness. It's the least harsh. In fact, the word Gedi is the same numerical value as Tov. It's the good part of the din. And the Cholav Imo, its mother's milk, is the closest thing to it. So it's the least crossing over. Still, you're not allowed to do it. Surely everything else. You can't mix judgment and mercy together. You can, when they're not synthesized, you can synthesize them, but you can't mix them just like this. That ruins, makes, causes a short circuit in the heavens. He says people think that it's good to minimize, mitigate the judgment with mercy. It is very good when you know how to synthesize them together, not when you mix them arbitrarily. Okay. Okay. The Mitzvahs David says that Bishul is a similar idea, but for a different, little bit different perspective. He says that Bishul means to fix up something, to prepare it. Okay, you prepare something for eating, you prepare something by ripening it. All that's called Bishul. Bishul is a tikkun, right? It's a preparation. Okay, and also Gedi has the connotation of the kochos hatumah. The powers of evil in the world are represented by seirim, by goats. Even in Christian things or whatever, the shadim, right? The various, what's it called, the bad angels look like goats. Okay, in satanic rites, right? They dress up like goats. A goat is a symbol of shadim and the powers of evil. The mother is a euphemism for the Jewish people. Knesset Yisrael is called Ein. So if you cook these powers of evil in the merciful mother's milk, what you're doing is you're taking the powers of good and using them to support the powers of evil. That kind of crossing of evil and good is not healthy for the world. And there's another idea. It says meat symbolizes, basar symbolizes death. Kate's called Basar Balafanai. And it represents death and tumor. And milk represents life. It's the beginning of the life of an animal, nurtures life. So you're mixing life and death together, not a healthy thing for the world. It's the same thing. Bikurim bring mercy to the Jewish people. So bring your Bikurim to the temple and bring mercy to the Jewish people. Don't cook milk and meat and bring mercy to the powers of evil. That not. Okay. Rav Shamsham for Hirsch, as usual, has a very symbolic idea of milk and meat. And he says the idea of kilayim altogether, sowing diverse seeds or cross-breeding things. He says God created everything lemino, according to its nature, its, what's it called, suk, its variety. Everything follows its variety. And everything has its laws of nature that apply to it. That give it its properties or whatever. And everything naturally stays within its properties. When you crossbreed things, when you cross-pollinate things or whatever, you create something that goes out of its variety, out of its nature, and you give it a new nature. And that is a bad lesson, because man also has his nature. Man has his rules and laws also that he has to follow. Those are God's laws. When you have things that you distort and make them go out of their nature and not keep their laws of nature, then man gets the feeling that he can go out of his nature and go out of the laws of nature also. Then he says another idea, why specifically milk and meat. He says that vegetable life has just two things about it. One is the idea of growth and reproduction. Animal life has mobility and thought added. Right? That's an animal. The animal also has growth and reproduction. Not only that, but the animal concentrates its thought and mobility, its movement, mostly on food and reproduction. It has nothing more to it. Human beings, on the other hand, have growth, reproduction, thought, movement, action, and also a neshama, speech. We're supposed to take all those things and raise them to the highest level, not bring them down to the lowest level. And therefore, when we eat an animal that has both, and the animal faces down, it's looking towards the vegetable, it goes back to its root. Man looks up, he's going upwards and elevating everything up towards God. So when you take the vegetative of the animal, the more vegetative part, the part that's involved with reproduction and food, and nourishment is milk. Milk nourishes the new baby, and it's formed as a result of a pregnancy. So the milk represents the vegetative side of the animal, when you take that vegetative side and you cook the meat, which represents the muscles, the movement, the what's it called, the thought part of the animal, you're taking it and using what's it called, the whole thing, just for the sake of the vegetation. You're putting him into a closed system. And when man eats that, it, instead of raising it to God, it's all just for the sake of growth and reproduction, and everything just becomes very, very much limited, right, to the physical animalistic kind of existence. You don't raise it higher. Okay, one last idea I want to say. And that's why he says this prohibition is said three times in the Torah, and all where all the major mitzvahs are. Mishpatim, the mitzvahs between man and man, because people have to be elevated people. They have to be refined people. And then they will definitely keep the Torah, and they'll definitely be very fine people one to the other. They won't need to be forced. You won't need society forcing them to be upright and just or whatever. They'll be naturally just because they'll be very refined. So if you don't eat milk and meat, meaning you understand you have to refine yourself and raise all these baser things of growth, reproduction, thought, movement to the higher level, then you'll be a good person. If not, you have to be forced to be a good person. You're not going to be naturally a good person. You'll be an animal. That's Rav Sham Shul Farsh. I want to say a different idea. We've explained in the past, we'll take one more minute, that the concept of the first, why is the first always dedicated to God? Firstborn, first of the dough, first fruits, so on, right? First of the year. We explained that the first isn't necessarily the best, but the first is the root and the foundation. It sets the pattern for everything that comes after. So if you take the first and you dedicate it to God, you've set a pattern that everything that follows, you'll also dedicate to God. You'll bring the first fruits to the temple, give it to the Kohen, and then you'll know when you'll eat the fruits that come after, you'll eat at least holy. It may not be holy of holies, but at least you'll eat it with holy thoughts. It'll follow that. If your first child you dedicate to the Rebbe Mishpat, the other ones at least you'll raise in a proper education. Right? The first sets the pattern for everything that comes afterwards. So, if that's the case, the first of the animal is the milk. That is the food that gives the animal its start in life. It's the concept of the base and the root of the life of that animal. Instead of taking the first and elevating it, you take that first and you use it as a closed system just to make the animal edible to you. That's the antithesis of taking first and elevating to God, taking the first and using it just to make that meat edible, right, to eat it in a very what's it called, sensual and gashmiistic, materialistic way. So it's the antithesis of the first. So the Torah says, bring your first fruits to the temple. Elevate the first. Don't cook milk and meat together, which is the antithesis of that, taking the first and making it just for your own selfish, what's it called, animalistic, materialistic desires. So that's the connection between bring your Bikurim, understand the first has to be dedicated to God to set the pattern, and don't cook milk and meat, which is the antithesis of using the first in the opposite way.